Hello. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, November 6th, 2025. I'm volunteer reader from Flagstaff, Lisa Cantor-Ganey, and today looks like we have four front page articles. The first one is called Defendants in Sex Sting Sentenced. Then EPA announces limited action on mine cleanup. CCC bond backed by voters. And path to purpose expands in second year with FUSD. So we'll start up at the top of the page and read the article that is titled, Two Defendants in Flagstaff Sex Sting Sentenced as Another Guilty Plea Emerges. And this article is written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. Two more defendants from the multi-agency online sex sting operation law agencies conducted this spring were sentenced in Coconino County Superior Court. Both were arrested after communicating with undercover law enforcement officers posing as minors selling sexual services. Brent W. Smith, 21, received a two-year prison sentence from Judge Joshua Steinledge in the court's Division II on Monday, October 27th. Smith pleaded guilty last month to a single count of attempted luring of a minor for sexual exploitation, a Class 4 felony with a sentencing range of 1.5 to 3 years. His defense attorney, Ryan Stevens, had requested the minimum sentence. In a pre-sentencing memorandum submitted to the court, Stevens wrote that Smith had been financially supporting his siblings and grandparents since the age of 17 and was highly unlikely to re-offend. This case has permanently affected his life already, and it is respectfully submitted that 1.5 years in prison is sufficiently punitive to achieve the goals of the criminal justice system in this case, Stevens stated. Letters of support submitted by members of Smith's family described him as a hard-working son, a devoted brother, and a good person who made a terrible mistake. I know he understands the seriousness of his actions and will live with the consequences for the rest of his life, one of Smith's siblings wrote to the judge. Prosecutors argued for a 2.5 year sentence, as recommended in the confidential pre-sentence report also submitted to the court. Steinledge's decision split the difference between the two positions. Smith will receive credit for 213 days of pre-sentence incarceration in the Coconino County Detention Facility, where he had been held since his arrest in late March. He must serve at least 85% of his remaining sentence before becoming eligible for parole. He will also be required to register as a sex offender for the remainder of his natural life. On Thursday, October 30th, Abel I. Ramos received a 4-year prison sentence, also from Steinledge. The length of the sentence was stipulated in his plea agreement with the state. Ramos, 39, pleaded guilty to one count of luring a minor for sexual exploitation earlier this month, a Class 3 felony. Jillian Marini of the Coconino County Legal Defender's Office, who served as Ramos's appointed attorney in the case, asked Steinlage to follow the stipulations of the plea. She noted that Ramos had experienced significant childhood trauma, documented in his confidential pre-sentence report, and that he has the support of family. Deputy County Attorney Michael Victor, appearing on behalf of fellow prosecutor Sasha Charles, also asked the court to impose the sentence specified by this plea. Victor noted Ramos's extensive criminal history, 4 prior felonies, and 11 misdemeanors, more than were acknowledged at the time of his change of plea hearing. Victor also referenced a previously unreported conversation with an undercover law enforcement officer. He claimed that, in exchange, Ramos made statements to the effect that he was willing to kill police in order to avoid going to prison. Steinlage ruled that Ramos's criminal record was a significant aggravating factor, and that his adverse childhood experiences, including exposure to methamphetamine, cocaine, and marijuana as a teenager, as well as sexual abuse, were a mitigating factor. As additional mitigation, he noted that Ramos had a prior diagnosis of bipolar disorder and the support of his family. Ultimately, Steinlage imposed the stipulated 4-year sentence. Ramos will receive credit for 235 days of pre-sentence incarceration in the county jail. Like Smith, he must serve at least 85% of his remaining sentence before parole eligibility and must register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. Another guilty plea. Following the Flagstaff Police Department's original disclosure of the sting operation in March, the department announced 4 additional arrests in May from a continuation of the sting. One of the men arrested in May was Ben J. Cheney, 49, who pleaded guilty before Judge Stacy Krueger on Friday, October 31st. Though originally indicted on 1 count of child sex trafficking, Cheney pleaded to 2 lesser charges of attempted luring of a minor for sexual exploitation, each a Class 4 felony. The normal sentencing range for that offense is 1.5 to 3 years in prison, with a presumptive sentence of 2.5 years. Cheney's plea stipulates that he will receive a prison term no greater than the presumptive sentence for the first count, to be served at 85% and lifetime probation with sex offender conditions for the second count. Cheney posted a $100,000 bond and was released from custody shortly after his arrest. He appeared in person for the change of plea hearing alongside defense attorney Bruce Griffin. Presenting the factual basis for the plea, Charles stated that on May 9th, Cheney communicated with an undercover officer who he believed to be a minor and twice offered or solicited sexual conduct. Cheney did not dispute any elements of the state's summary. By mutual agreement of the parties, Cheney will remain out of custody pending a sentencing hearing in January. And there we go, that article. was titled Two Defendants in Flagstaff Sex Sting Sentenced as Another Guilty Plea Emerges, and that was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. Our next front page story today is under the banner of education, and it is called Initial Elections Results Posted for CCC Bond Show Support for $100 million initiative. And this is written by Daily Sun staff. Let's see. Initial results from the election on Coconino Community College's CCC bond show a high likelihood of the $100 million in funding being approved. As of Thursday morning, the most recent results from the November 4th election show support for the bond still leading with over 58% of the vote. The results webpage lists the last update as happening just before 1:50 a.m. on Wednesday. As of that update, 58.1% of votes, or 11,430 total, were in favor of the bond, compared to 41.9% who voted against it, 8,242 voters. Voter turnout is listed as 22.07% of the county's 89,310 registered voters. CCC sent a press release about the results Thursday morning, celebrating the preliminary results and outlining its planned construction projects for the bond. Tonight's result is a resounding statement of confidence in the future of Coconino County, said CCC President and CEO Eric Heiser in the release. Voters have given CCC the opportunity to expand access to high-quality education, strengthen our workforce, and create new opportunities for students across northern Arizona. We are deeply grateful for the community's trust and support. According to the release, the college will begin the planning and design of the healthcare building on Lone Tree and the new 4th Street campus, followed by the projects in Williams and Page. It plans to post updates at coconino.edu/bond. We are thrilled with the outcome of the election and would like to thank the voters for trusting in CCC and recognizing this as an investment not only in CCC but in Coconino County, said Joseph R. Smith, the chair of CCC's governing board. We cannot wait to put this new funding source to use and to continue to address the education and workforce needs of our communities. The college's bond, also called Question 490, was the only item on the ballot for most Flagstaff voters this year. The item was also presented to voters across Coconino County. Ballots could be returned by mail, in a drop box, or in person, and needed to be received by 7 p.m. on Election Day. The initial results came from early ballots submitted before the start of tabulation on October 22nd, according to the County Elections Department. Results from ballots cast on Election Day were released overnight, with the remainder happening daily until the process is complete. According to a release from the county, the cure deadline is November 7th. So tabulation cannot be completed until that day after 5 p.m. at the earliest. All election results are preliminary and not official until they are canvassed by the County Board of Supervisors in mid-November. With this bond, CCC is seeking $100 million to fund the construction costs of projects throughout the county. The item is a general obligation property tax bond question and would include an estimated average tax rate of 25 cents per $100 of net assessed valuation used for secondary tax purposes that would be paid off over a 20-year period. CCC has placed the estimated cost to Flagstaff homeowners at an average of $6 to $7 a month. One project that is planned, if the bond's passage becomes official, is rebuilding the 4th Street campus, which would include a new space for the East Flag Community Library and adding spaces for the Boys and Girls Club of Flagstaff and the High Country Training Academy. The list of bond projects also includes adding an Allied Health Center on the Lone Tree campus, student housing in Page, and a career and technical education lab in Williams. More information about elections in Coconino County can be found at coconino.az.gov/elections. And that article was titled Initial Election Results Posted for CCC Bond Show Support for $100 Million Initiative. And that was written by the Daily Sun staff. Now we'll move on to our third front page article today. This one is also about education. It's titled Coconino Community Colleges Path to Purpose Program Enters Second Year at FUSD High Schools. And this article is written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. A program providing students with support and post-secondary guidance throughout their time in high school is now in its second year across the Flagstaff Unified School District in partnership with Coconino Community College. The Path to Purpose program started last year with success coaches working with students at Flagstaff and Coconino High Schools, FHS and CHS, and has now expanded to include Summit High School as it adds students across all three schools. It is funded by the largest donation in CCC's history, $4 million over 4 years from an anonymous private donor first announced in 2023. FUSD then approved a 3-year pilot program in 2 of its high schools, which started in 2024. In a presentation to FUSD's board September 23rd, program leaders at CCC said the donor had pledged additional funds to Path to Purpose after hearing about its progress so far. More than 100 students are now participating in Path to Purpose. Because it continues with students throughout their high school careers, each year adds another grade level as participating students move forward with their education. The program currently includes 9th and 10th graders who meet with the success coaches at least 3 times a month, twice individually, and once in a group session for their grade level. FHS 10th graders Karma Sathoff and Kylie Yazzie are both in their second year with Path to Purpose. Though they're still in the first half of their time in high school, Both are already making plans for what they'd like to do next and taking steps to meet those goals. Satoff said she was interested in the program because she wants to go to college and wanted to find a school that would be a good fit. Yazzie said her interest came because she wasn't sure of her plans and wanted to find a direction. "I feel like once you get to high school, everything goes by so fast," Yazzie said, of why she started thinking about college early in her high school career. "Your first 2 years, you just want to have fun. And then in junior year, I don't know what to do, I don't know who I want to be, and it happens really fast." Yazzie said she wants to work as a physical therapist, while Satoff hopes to work in graphic design. "I would say just do something that you love, like something that you've always loved doing," Satoff advised other students. "For me, I've always loved art, and I feel like graphic design really falls into that." The students said their Path to Purpose sessions include discussions of the steps they can take toward their goals, including help with high school, as well as the planning activities often associated with school guidance counselors. Both said they also had a personal goal of improving their interpersonal skills and that they were making progress through the program. The group sessions discuss topics such as character development and ways to help others, Yazzie said. They also include monthly lunch and learns and leadership activities, such as working as a team to cover over a rerouted trailhead at Buffalo Park as part of the Arizona Trail Association's Seeds of Stewardship program. At the end of the school year, the group celebration meal also includes an etiquette lesson to prepare students for events they might attend in the future. Satoff described a learning zone activity that was part of the September Lunch and Learn that had students identify their areas of strength and need for growth. She said she was inspired to volunteer at CCC's STEM camp for middle schoolers this year by some of her activities as part of the program. Fostering success. The Path to Purpose program's goal is to help students find their passion and find their purpose, said program director Alexis Knapp-Polly. "I think a big part of our program is encouraging students and showing them that they can get there," she said. "We're supporting them, providing them the tools and the resources to be able to visualize it for themselves." Kate Cassidy, a success coach at FHS, added that she and the other coaches have been working to help their students develop self-advocacy this year, a skill she hoped they would use throughout their lives. The program now employs 5 success coaches who work with the students. Sarah Bischke at Summit, Casey Donahue and Kieragan Wall at CHS, and Cassidy and Scott Schaefer at FHS. At FHS, Schaefer comes to the role following work in high school education and mental health, while Cassidy has a background in counseling and higher education. The success coaches, though employed by CCC, work alongside the high school's counseling staff to provide extra guidance to identified students. Polly described the program as supplementing the work already done by counselors at FUSD's high schools. Students are selected for the process following a short application, which opens every semester. The coaches worked with school guidance counselors, teachers, and CCC's middle school summer camps to identify those who might benefit from the program and encourage students to apply. This year, the FHS coaches presented in all of the ninth grade English classes. Path to Purpose has five areas of focus: academic success, building community, career exploration, character development, and post-secondary education. The coaches are tasked with helping students work toward these goals and are able to personalize their approach to the needs of individual students. Polly noted that they use curriculum guidance from the National Association for College Admission Counseling and also refer students to experts in other areas as needed. One of our biggest goals is to meet students where they're at, Cassidy said. With the lower grade levels, Schaefer said the coaches spend time getting to know the students, their goals, values, and strengths, to better tailor their recommendations. They also go through career exploration activities and teach them about opportunities available in their high school, such as ways to earn college credit. Cassidy said the sophomores recently completed an activity called What Can I Do With This Major? To help them explore available options. A goal with juniors would be the FAFSA completion, Schaefer added. And one aspect of the program for high school seniors might support in finding financial aid. All students ideally will at least have experienced filling out and completing a FAFSA, he said. Whether they're planning to enroll directly in college or go into the workforce and pursue college later. Freshmen might learn about SMART goals and how to develop short and long-term goals, Polly said, as well as terminology associated with college and careers, such as GPA, tuition, and various types of post-secondary education. Pilot program. The program really has exceeded our wildest expectations just in the first year, said CCC Vice President of Advancement and Strategic Initiatives, Diana Sanchez, during the September board meeting. A total of 63 students participated in Path to Purpose during its first year, according to that presentation, with success coaches working with an average of about 15 students each and completing a total of 574 individual sessions. Over 90% of participating students decided to continue into their sophomore year. And that article was titled Coconino Community College's Path to Purpose Program Enter Second Year at FUSD High Schools. And that was written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. And now we've made it to the fourth of the front page articles. And this one is called EPA Announces Limited Action on Mine Cleanup. And this was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, announced on Monday that abandoned uranium mine cleanup operations have begun at the Lukachukai Mountains Mining District in the northern part of the Navajo Nation, though the work planned so far will remediate only a small fraction of the mine waste in the area. The mining district was added to the EPA's National Priority List, more commonly known as the list of Superfund sites last year. Navajo leaders welcomed the announcement at the time, but they also urged the federal government to follow through with concrete action. According to the EPA, the cleanup operation will transfer approximately 13,000 cubic yards of mine waste from the Mesa V complex of mines into a newly constructed on-site repository, preventing radioactive materials from being carried away by water runoff. The work will be carried out by Arrowhead Contracting, a firm that is majority owned by the Southern Ute Indian Tribe, at a cost of approximately $13 million. Completion of the project is estimated to take about a year. The Mesa V mines are only a few of the dozens of abandoned uranium mines within the Lukachukai Mountains and the hundreds within the Navajo Nation as a whole. Atomic Energy Commission personnel surveyed the area for its uranium potential beginning around 1950, numbering some of the ranges, promontories, as they went, and kicked off a mining boom lasting until about 1968 that produced millions of tons of ore. Many of the mines in that area were originally operated by Kerr McGee Oil Industries Incorporated. When Kerr McGee spun off its subsidiary company Tronox Incorporated in the early 2000s, Tronox inherited responsibility for many heavily contaminated sites, including abandoned mines in the Lukachukai Mountains. In 2014, Tronox entered into a settlement agreement with the EPA to provide roughly $1 billion for cleanup of 49 former Kerr McGee mines on the Navajo Nation, with the Mesa V mines among those covered by the settlement. The Lukachukai Mountains Mining District contains around 800,000 cubic yards of mine waste, according to the EPA. The 13,000 cubic yards now scheduled for containment accounts for roughly 1.6% of that total. Much of the waste is contaminated with hazardous levels of radium and uranium, and the contamination has spread along old haul roads and through water runoff. Contaminants are migrating off-site from multiple AUM, abandoned uranium mine sites, via the surface water pathway in a majority of the drainages, a 2019 technical survey of the area noted. The spread of uncontained radioactive materials threatens nearby Navajo residents and communities, including Cove. Exposure to radioactive material, either directly through employment in the mines, or indirectly through tailings, mine waste, groundwater contamination, and other pathways, has significantly impacted the health of many members of the Navajo Nation from the 1940s through the present. Although the federal government has made commitments to clean up and compensation, scholars have noted that fulfillment of those promises has been slow and often incomplete. In a press release, EPA Pacific Southwest Superfund Director Michael Montgomery said, "Removing mine waste at this Superfund site is a significant milestone in EPA's work to clean up uranium contamination on the Navajo Nation. This action follows the cleanup completed earlier this fall at the nearby Cove transfer stations and shows EPA's continued commitment to protecting human health and the environment of the Navajo people. The former Cove transfer stations, where uranium ore was stored before being transported to mills, have been the target of multiple remediation actions over the last two decades, and were recently used as a test site for an experimental process intended to separate uranium from non-hazardous waste materials. Stephen Etzidi, the director of the Navajo Nation Environmental Protection Agency, could not be reached for comment regarding the cleanup announcement. And that article was titled EPA Announces Limited Action on Mine Cleanup by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff Reporter. And just as a reminder, you're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print materials due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also get our stream and on-demand programs with the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android devices. Next up, we're going to move on and read this article off of the local Arizona page. And it is called October Storms Provide Strong Start to Water Year for Area by Cody Bashore, digital editor. Though the precipitation from the first half of October did not return for the second half of the month, Flagstaff started off its hydrological year well ahead of normal for the second consecutive year. The National Weather Service, NWS, resets one of its precipitation measurements annually on October 1st in accordance with the hydrological year, also called a water year, as defined by the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS. With a total of 3.63 inches of precipitation falling in October, as measured at the Flagstaff Pulliam Airport, the amount landed as the 11th most recorded since 1900 and is 2.11 inches ahead of normal. October's normal precipitation total is 1.52 inches, according to the NWS office in Belmont. And last October also easily surpassed the expected amount with 3.21 inches. The 3.63 inches of precipitation from this October currently accounts for nearly 25% of Flagstaff's rainfall dating back to January 1st. Though the calendar year is still 2.31 inches behind its normal amount of 17.07 throughout 10 months. Nearly all of October's precipitation came in a six-day span, with 3.59 inches falling from October 9th to October 14th, with the remaining 0.04 recorded on October 22nd. Three specific days in October accounted for almost all of the precipitation, with one daily record set and two others ranking second all time. The 0.96 inches on October 10th easily surpassed the daily record of 0.58 set in 1985, while October 11th's 1.28 ranked second behind 1928's 1.45, and October 13th's 1.12 inches was second all-time. Oh my gosh, sorry for all these numbers. it makes for confusing reading. Behind 1941's 1.31. All three single-day totals now rank among the top 40 for precipitation in October. A total of five October days from 1972 rank among the top 12 as that year holds the record for October precipitation at 9.86 inches, well ahead of 1941's 4.9 inches. Totals for some locations around the Flagstaff area were unavailable, with Sunset Crater National Monument, Walnut Canyon National Monument, and Wapatki National Monument not listing weather data for the month of October due to the federal government shutdown. Belmont recorded 2.78 inches of precipitation in October, well above the normal of 1.57 inches. While Grand Canyon National Park measured just 0.59 inches of rain, well below the normal of 1.34 inches. Even with temperatures in Flagstaff well above normal for the final few days of October, between 5 and 11 degrees higher in four of the month's final 5 days, the monthly average high did not come close to matching 2024's unseasonable heat. With an average high of 65.3 degrees, this October fell well behind last year's average high of 70.9 degrees, which ranked as the fourth hottest October in history. In 2024, the average October temperature of 53.1 degrees surpassed 1988's 52.5 as the warmest in history. Through 10 months, 2025 is tied for seventh all-time for the average high temperature at 66.4 degrees, tied for 11th all-time in warmest average temperature at 50.9 degrees, and is 13th all-time in warmest average low temperature at 35.4 degrees. The Climate Prediction Center from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has projected Arizona for a 50 to 60% chance of above normal temperatures in November, with a 40 to 50% chance of lower than normal precipitation. According to the forecast through Veterans Day, temperatures in Flagstaff were expected to range from 62 to 66 degrees with no precipitation. And that local article was called October Storms Provide Strong Start to Water Year for Area. And that was written by Cody Bashore, digital editor. Next, we're going to move on to a lot of local news briefs. Looks like there's quite a few today about local news. The first one is titled Boys and Girls Club of Flagstaff Hosting Fourth Annual Culture Night, November 7th, written by Daily Sun staff. The Boys and Girls Club of Flagstaff's Native Services Department will be hosting the fourth annual Culture Night on Friday, November 7th. Scheduled from 5 to 8 p.m., the night will include a celebration of Native American culture, including art, traditional crafts, cultural performances, traditional foods, and activities at the Flagstaff Club, located at 301 South Paseo de Flagstaff. The event is open to the public as it helps create and celebrate a space for the community to spread awareness of indigenous values and teachings. Our next news brief is called City Organizing Food Drive for Community Members in Need. Also by Daily Sun staff. It looks like they're all written by Daily Sun staff today. The City of Flagstaff is hosting a food drive and will be collecting items at city facilities to help provide items to community members in need ahead of the holiday season. Due to the federal government shutdown and the disruption of federal food and nutrition benefits, demand for food and other essential items is higher this year. The items of greatest need include shelf-stable foods such as canned tuna, canned chicken, trail mix, crackers, beef sticks, fruit cups, protein bars, peanut butter, pasta, and other canned goods. Baby supplies such as baby formula, baby wipes and diapers, and cold weather accessories including socks, hats, and gloves are also of need. Lastly, personal hygiene items including toothpaste, toothbrushes, deodorant, toilet paper, shower soap, and feminine hygiene products will also be accepted for donation. All donations collected by the city will be transferred to the Flagstaff Family Food Center for distribution to the community. Items can be donated until December 31st at one of these locations. And I'll read the list of places you can make a donation. City Hall, Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30. The Police Department, Monday to Friday, 8 to 5. Aquaplex, Monday to Friday, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, 6 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. And Sunday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Hal Jensen Recreation Center, Monday to Friday, 10 to 7. Joe Montoya Senior Center, Monday through Thursday, 7 to 8, Friday, 7 to 2. J. Lively Activity Center, during operating hours. Public Works Facility, Monday to Friday, 8 to 4:30. And the Sustainability Office, Monday through Thursday, 8 to 4:30. And Friday from 8 to 12:30. So if you can and want to help, there's places you can make donations. Next local news brief is called United States Capitol Christmas Tree to make stop in Flagstaff on November 7th, so tomorrow. As it makes its way to the west lawn of the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, D.C., the U.S. Capitol Christmas Tree will make its only stop in Arizona on Friday in Flagstaff. The giant pine tree, named Silver Bell, will be displayed on a truck outside the Flagstaff Mall from 5 to 7 p.m. The 53-foot red fir was harvested from the Carson Ranger District on the Humboldt-Toyabe National Forest in Nevada near Lake Tahoe. Visitors can view and take pictures with the tree, sign the banner, buy official U.S. Capitol Christmas tree merchandise, and learn more about national forests. The event, which is free and open to the public, will feature appearances by Smokey Bear and Santa Claus, and guests can bring an unwrapped toy for the Salvation Army of Flagstaff Angel Tree and receive an extra ticket for prize drawings. Children can also receive a kit to make a snowman ornament while supplies last. The U.S. Capitol Christmas Tree Initiative began in 1970 as the U.S. Forest Service and the Office of the Architect have selected a tree from various forests in the United States. In 2009, an 85-foot blue spruce from Apache Sitgreaves National Forest was selected as the U.S. Capitol Christmas tree and is the only tree to come from Arizona in the 55-year history of the project. The next of our news brief here is called Coconino County Facilities Light Up Green to support Operation Greenlight for veterans. During the Coconino County Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday, the county announced it would light up its facilities in green as part of Operation Greenlight. A nationwide effort by counties, the National Association of Counties, NACO, and the National Association of County Veterans Services Officers, Operation Green Light will show support by letting veterans know they are seen, appreciated, and supported. It is so important to recognize our veterans as they shift from active duty to civilian life, said Patrice Horstman, District 1 Supervisor and Chair of the Board. It is our job to support them and provide the services they need to thrive. Lighting our buildings green honors their service and raises awareness about the need for adequate assistance. Through November 11th, a total of 11 Coconino County facilities in Flagstaff and one in Williams will be illuminated green to show support for veterans and raise awareness around the resources available at the county, state, and federal levels to assist veterans and veterans and their families. According to the 2024 American Community Survey, Coconino County has 6,591 veterans, representing approximately 4.5% of the total population. Now in its fifth year, Operation Green Light is expected to draw hundreds of participating counties from states across the nation. Residents, businesses, and community organizations are encouraged to participate in Operation Green Light by changing one light to a green bulb. For more information on Operation Green Light, visit naco.org/program/operation-green-light-veterans. And our next news brief here is titled Grant Bolsters Route 66 Revitalization Program. The Arizona State Parks and Trails, Arizona State Historic Preservation Office, SHPO, announced it received a grant of $585,000 from the National Park Service, NPS, in order to drive economic development in rural areas through rehabilitation and adaptive reuse of historic properties. According to the press release announcing the award, SHPO plans to use the grant to fund its Arizona Route 66 Revitalization Subgrant Program, which provides funding for eligible commercial and civic properties along rural stretches of Arizona's Route 66 corridor. Specifically, the SHPO program will provide grants of up to $100,000 to rehab historic properties along the 385-mile stretch of Route 66 that runs through the entire state of Arizona. Eligible properties include motels, gas stations, trading posts, civic buildings, and other sites once serving as vital hubs for travelers. The SHPO grant, or subgrant, program also includes outreach, technical and planning support through its partner organizations, the Historic Route 66 Association of Arizona, Local First Arizona, and the Arizona Preservation Foundation. The funding is available through the NPS Paul Bruhn Historic Revitalization Program, grant program, which has provided competitive funding to government agencies and nonprofits since 2019. Information on eligibility and how to apply for the Arizona Route 66 Revitalization Subgrant Program will be available at azstateparks.com/SHPO in early December. And those were today's news briefs. So that's all the time we have for the Arizona Daily Sun today. For Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of your day. Take care.